I do think this will be one of the more difficult, trying training camps for our guys. You know, there's going to be a lot of volume. There's going to be a lot of contact. There's going to be a lot of, obviously, a lot of strenuous days with the three scrimmages we have. We're playing in the preseason game, so we're going to get a lot of volume. We're going to get a lot of opportunities to see our guys operate on a day-to-day basis. And we've got what I feel is a really, really good plan to get us peaking when training camp ends, to allow us to build the armor that's required to survive a 17-week season. So.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast live edition, as the Tennessee Titans have reported to training camp officially. Mike Borgonzi and Robert Saleh speaking to the media on Tuesday. We're going to recap what they said. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me as always, the managing editor of TitanSize.com, publisher for NFL Draft on SI, the Yada Yada King, my co-host Justin Mello. Justin, it's here. It's training camp is here. The Titans will practice tomorrow. We got a lot to break down from what Mike Borgonzi and Robert Saleh just told us, including a bit on that opening intro. But I will say, just a full disclosure and transparency, honesty to the audience as always, pretty boring, uneventful press conference overall. Didn't really learn that much, but we will break down what we did learn. Justin, how you doing?
As Wee Lit says in the comments, I'm doing well, doing well. You bet your bottom dollar I'm doing well. Give you a third one because training camp has finally arrived. Excited about that. As you noted, Mike Borgonzi and Robert Saleh spoke to the local media Tuesday afternoon, approximately 24 hours before the team is set to take the field for their first training camp practice, their first of many. The first open one is this weekend on Saturday, open to the fans who can be there in attendance. But I am pretty pumped that it's back. And yeah, it wasn't the most eventful presser, but I took some, good, clear, concise notes, if you will, on a couple of the things that Robert Saleh and Mike Borgonzi said that I want to talk about. In fact, I think I'm going to open with one that I considered to be a little underrated, and was initially planning on saving it for, the middle towards the end of the show. But this is the Music City Audible, so I'm calling an audible on our rundown. And it's actually because you kind of opened with the clip. And full disclosure, this is an honest podcast. We're in the circle of trust. I didn't know what you clipped for the cold opening of the show.
True.
And I didn't expect it to be that one, but because you did, you clipped that one, then I'm going to go with that one. So what I had kind of written down, taking notes, was the reason I found it interesting was Robert Saleh said when they broke away, I believe, after minicamp, OTAs and everything, said he felt that the communication between himself and all of the team's departments was very clear. And he listed strength and conditioning. He listed nutrition. He listed performance. All the different departments that collaborate, if you will, on player-based performance. And he felt that the expectations were clear. And now is the time that they had that break, 4, 5, 6 weeks. Now they're back at camp. It's time to evaluate how they treated their bodies, when they were away. It's time to evaluate how they respond. Because he feels, again, that he set out clear expectations, right? So there's no miscommunication. There's no, well, I thought this, I thought that. These days, what did he say in the clip that you played there? These days are going to be tough. They're going to be strenuous. There's going to be a lot of volume. I think, a lot of reps, a lot of physical contact. Once the pads come on, he hinted again at we're going to play in the preseason. Like, starters are going to play. So there are preseason reps as well. And all that is done to survive a 17-game season. He said, in response to how you manage injuries, if you can play, then you should be practicing. And that the moment the pads come on, which is going to be, sooner rather than later, no one's healthy anymore. Everyone's getting dinged. Everyone's dealing with something. So obviously, he takes how these guys kind of, treat their bodies and get ready for a long training. He takes that very serious. He feels he did his part, right? We set out clear expectations. We had communication with every department. Did you do your part? Now that you're back at camp, because we warned you what it's going to be like. I found that to be a very interesting, insightful quote from Robert Saleh.
You know, I did too, and it made me think of something I saw on Twitter last week, which, you know what, Justin, I wasn't planning to do this, but just like you, I can call an audible. Give me 1 second, chat. 1 second. I don't know if we're going to disappear from the screen when I do this, so just bear with me, but I'll talk through what I'm trying to say. So apparently the Giants have been doing something what many of their fans considered like soft or weak throughout. Lance McCutcheon has a solid chance to retire. That's the cornerback that they cut, right?
No, I think he means this. He's talking about the receiver who retired and then came out of retirement. Remember?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Well, once he realizes how vigorous this training camp's going to be, maybe, right. Or
which
rigorous, I should say, maybe he'll retire. So anyway, under Brian Daboll, apparently the Giants training camps were very soft and light and easy, and the Giants fans did not like that at all. And now let's see what happens if I try to put this on the screen. Oh, that's what I thought. And we made it. Here we go. All right, here's the tweet. It's from July 7th, so more. Oh, wow, so 3 weeks ago. Dan Dugan mentions how rigorous the Giants training camp will be under John Harbaugh compared to Brian Daboll. 10 practices in the first 11 days of camp. Daboll never held practice more than 3 straight days in camp. And all of the comments responding from Giants fans, his teams were never ready to start the season. He was a chalkboard head coach. But Daboll had the best vibes. Eye roll. Different culture. These boys need the discipline to play against the big boys. Anyway, it's a whole string of comments like that. That was the first thing I thought of when Saleh talked about how rigorous this training camp process is going to be, is that this isn't the soft thing that maybe Brian Daboll got used to in New York, or maybe that Giants fans were complaining about it being, or even Jets fans when Robert Saleh started talking about easing players in. And when the rookies didn't actually the highly drafted rookies didn't actually participate back in rookie minicamp because they had just gone through a rigorous draft season, all that stuff, all this talk about, oh, this is country club Saleh, they're going to be soft, et cetera, et cetera. Those were the things that I immediately thought of when he gave this quote. This training camp's going to be hard. It's going to push you. It's going to be physical. It's going to, he said, build the armor we need to survive a 17-game season. Throw all the criticisms, the country club accusations out the window, because Robert Saleh is telling you right here, right now, this is going to be tough. And that's the way you want it to be. That's how you build a tough football team, mentally and physically tough. The quote he said about, if you think you would be out there on game day, you should be out there practicing. There's a difference between like a bump and a bruise that you feel sore about and actually being injured. He said everybody's injured after the first day of pads. Did you mention that just now? Maybe you did. This is the type of mentally tough culture that Saleh is establishing. Right. And the reason I opened the show with this clip, it's the only clip we actually are going to play from the presser today, because for the interest of speeding up getting this live out to you guys, we only clipped that one quote. But that, to me, is the most impactful, most important. It's like the thesis of what the Titans are under Robert Saleh, or what they want to be, at least. That stood out more than anything else to me as, like, this is a defining characteristic of what this training camp will be. It will be tough, intentionally, to prepare these players for a long season.
And I love that. And I ultimately think that the guys who thrive and survive, if you will, are the kind of guys they're looking for, right? It's the kind of guys they want to build this football team around, and who they want to, you know, be their starters. If, you know, if one of those right guards, for example, handles it better than the other, then they'll feel they have found their guy, right? So I think from Mike Borgonzi down, everyone's on the same page. You brought up some of the other teams. By the way, Mike McCarthy, you know, experienced head coach, Pittsburgh Steelers, interviewed here with the Titans. At one point, we kind of lobbied for him a little bit very early in the process with someone we were interested in. He came out and said the Steelers won't be doing any live tackling drills at all during training camp. They will not be doing live tackle. Like, I thought that, I mean, listen, guys, I get you want to protect guys from injuries, and we might have a different opinion on this if the Titans lose some very important players during camp. Like, you know, it's a fine line you try to walk, and I don't think there's always a right or wrong answer, to be honest, right? It's about striking that right balance. How do you get your team fully prepared but avoid injuries and avoid getting them too banged up? before meaningful football actually starts. But I thought that was crazy that he said no live tackling drills. That blew me away. Before we take our first break, you want to hit the thing a couple of times? What do you think? I think we've delayed it long enough.
Yes, I will try. Can you hear me? I'm potentially working through a connection issue here. Am I still with
you? I can hear
you. Am I getting clearer?
I can hear you.
You can't hear me. Hey, can you hear me
now? I know I can hear you, I said. I said I can.
Gotcha. All right. Hitting the thing.
You've got to hit the, you know, hit the thing. Well, you got to put the super chat up on the, Jesus. It's training camp for Graver
the big one.
As well. He reported
well,
this
look,
morning.
I'm multitasking, and you threw it to me while I'm trying to sort out why my picture is a little fuzzy. All right, we got two here. One from Inspector Callahan, 499. Here you go. Mr. Toronto, please say go Calgary Flames. Love the content, guys. Tighten up from here in Los Angeles. Titans Flames fan in wow. L.A. Ha ha. Yes, go L.A. I lived in L.A. for 10 years. Loved L.A. Not there anymore, but glad that you still are. And Justin, this is over to you.
Yeah.
Are you going to say it?
He asked me to say it, so I'm going to say it. Go Calgary Flames. Like Ron Burgundy, I'll say anything that you put up on the teleprompter, and I'll say anything when a super chat tip is involved. Go Calgary Flames. A Calgary Flames fan in LA, I mean, you must be from Calgary initially, because that's, I don't think there's any Calgary fans outside of Calgary, so that's definitely an interesting one. But go Titans, and I guess go Flames. I said it, Ron Burgundy. If you put a question mark at the end of it, I would have read it in a questioned voice.
All right, and this one, Gary Soto gets the all four drops at once treatment. Oh, my.
We keep it open for now.
You know, hit the thing.
For a $100 super chat, Gary says, sorry I missed the live on Friday. I had one question, though. If you had to make a bet, which Titans player do you think is most likely to retire during training camp? So here's this question yet again posed to us. Lance McCutcheon was a good one, but yeah, what, you got another one?
We're on a heck of a run, right? Is it 2 years in a row we've had one? I think it's 2 years in a row, right? We had Sadiq Charles 2 years ago. And Lorenzo Carter last year. So we've had two in a row. Oh, boy. You know what? I'm going to, because it's Gary Soto, and because I'm going to answer this question seriously, like, I'm going to try to pick someone. God, Lance McCutcheon was a great call by Roster Grids earlier in the chat. Before Gary even asked this question, Roster Grids joked about Lance McCutcheon. I'm going to go Jalen Holmes, the ninth year defensive end they just signed a couple of weeks ago. He was unsigned. Maybe he gets to Robert Saleh's camp, and, you know, he's 30, been in the league for a while. I'm going Jalen Holmes.
Jalen Holmes is a good one.
Ernest Brown was my second call. I almost went Ernest Brown. So.
Daniel says that there were three in a row. Who was the O-line named Sobroni?
Tyson Brelo? Was it Tyson Brelo?
Yeah, there you go. Sam Brillo, yeah. So there were three in a row. And Justin?
We keeping a book right now.
Another super chat comes through. Nash Russ, $10 super chat. Glad to see Gary Soto is back. Look at that, Justin. Now we know GS does not stand for Golden State. It stands for Gary Soto. And yes, we are all glad to see Gary back. Welcome back to the stream, Gary. No hard feelings on missing Friday's show. We missed you. We didn't miss your money. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say we missed you being here and enjoying the stream with us. We appreciate your generous donations, as always. Thank you so much. Justin, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha steaks, because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak, because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard us talk about BetterHelp for the past month or so now, but I don't know that we've ever actually talked about how much people love this service when they use it. You can check it out yourself at betterhelp.com/reviews to see amazing customer reviews in real time. And these reviews are updated every day, with hundreds of people saying how much they love BetterHelp and how helpful it's been to them. Please visit betterhelp.com/reviews to see for yourself. BetterHelp has an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client session reviews. The feedback from people who have actually used the service speaks for itself. BetterHelp therapists have at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of hands-on experience. They also hold all required education, training, and certifications across a range of mental health specialties. BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. Just answer a few questions, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, and switch therapists at any time if it's not the right fit. See the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, audio audience. Boy, you guys missed a lot during that break. That was like a 5 minute break, 3 minute break, and you guys all missed it unless you're watching us on YouTube, which is where you should be. And if you are on YouTube, we appreciate you. If you're here live right now, we really appreciate it. Make sure you like the stream so other people can find it. Make sure you stay on afterwards and drop a comment below. Subscribe to the Music City Audible channel. If you're just listening on audio, you are missing out. Head over to the YouTube, subscribe there, turn on channel notifications, and we will continue reacting to the presser. Justin, some of the things that were talked about that kind of stood out a little bit. We'll start with the injuries. That's where Mike Borgonzi started the presser. Amani Hooker will be coming off PUP today, according to Borgonzi, today or tomorrow, before practices begin. He is going to be perfectly healthy and fine, ready to go. JC Latham, not the same case, although the injury is not serious. Apparently, he's been working through a strained pec, which, for an offensive lineman, that is obviously a big deal. You need full use of your pec muscles to push in terms of blocking. Like, just think about the mechanical, what those muscles function do for your body. So he will remain on the PUP list for now, but Borgonzi called him day-to-day. And really, I thought, Justin, it was interesting the way that he spoke about Latham. This is before any questions came in. This was basically his opening statement of the presser. He starts trying to head off what he knows is going to be the panicked fan base reaction or whatever, talking about how happy they are with JC Latham's performance this offseason so far, that they're satisfied with what he's done, that he's been constantly around the facility, that he's been giving it his all, and that they're excited for him to get back on the field. They're ready for him to take another leap this season. So it felt like Borgonzi was trying to like do a little JC Latham PR, get ahead of a negative story, the way that he reported that Latham would not be coming off of PUP right away.
Yeah, it certainly came off as him being in tune with what the reaction was, right, to JC Latham going on the PUP list, if you will. Yes, I called it the PUP, Patrick M8595. Good that Amani Hooker is off the list. He's already been activated, which means, by the way, it means you got to pass a physical, right, when you get cleared. So he'll presumably be a participant in tomorrow's practice, and hopefully Latham's not far behind. They didn't sound concerned about the injury, calling him day-to-day, so you would anticipate that he comes off the list pretty soon. I guess we could start running down some other notes and newser from the presser, if you will. Obviously, you know, I think this goes without saying, but, you know, Mike Borgonzi touched on the offseason goal was to build around Cam Ward. We obviously added some weapons for him through free agency and the draft, of course, referring to Wandale Robinson and Carnell Tate. I thought it was interesting that he added to that at the end, continuing to invest in the offensive line, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think he said is the next step. to me, it was almost like an admission that, you know, we're not fully there on the O-line. We know we're not fully there, but it's part of the process. Though at the end of the presser, I'm jumping around a little bit, but he said that he's satisfied with where the offensive line is. That's obviously a quote that I'm going to be taking to heart and paying close attention to throughout training camp. He said, we drafted a couple of guys, of course, referring to Pat Coogan and Fernando Carmona. We signed a couple in free agency. I guess that's referring to Austin Schlotman and Cordell Volson. I don't think anyone else really counts. I know they just signed someone, I think Zach Thomas, but, you know, the late addition there. Satisfied with where the offensive line is. I think they both added, you know, Saleh included. We'll see once the pads come on. Again, you know, not really going to be able to evaluate your offensive line until they've got a block D linemen who are in pads and they're in pads themselves. And of course, the, you know, interior is part of our concern. They'll get some great tests and challenges from Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers. So some interesting comments on the O-line, but obviously, you know, feels good about what else they've done around Cam Ward.
Yeah, and we all feel great about the weapons they've added around Cam Ward. You know what would have been really cool, Justin, is if they'd been able to add a Carnell Tate-level receiver, a Wandale Robinson-level receiver, and a Jeremiah Love-level running back. Can you imagine if they'd pulled that off? But I do think it's one thing to be satisfied with the shape that the O-line has taken thus far before you've seen them go against anybody with pads on or any, you know, not fellow teammates on the, you know, other side of the ball. And then once you actually see it, maybe you're not so satisfied. Like, I'm kind of taking what Borgonzi said there with a grain of salt. It's like, that's basically like saying that you feel good about the test you just took before the grade comes back. It's like, yeah, we addressed the things we needed to address in the offseason. Are we going to pass the test? I don't know. We haven't taken it. We haven't got the grade yet, so we'll find out. So, like, saying he's satisfied now, kind of meaningless. But, I mean, I hope he's satisfied now. He's the one that did the work that made the offensive line what it is. If he's not satisfied, what was he doing the whole time? So, kind of a tongue-in-cheek. I mean, I don't know if I really care that much about him being satisfied yet today, you know?
Right. Well, one of the other interesting things that was said that I think is sort of, I'm going to tie these two points together. Robert Saleh reiterated, and he has said it so many times this offseason, it's why I'm bringing it up, that they will be using joint practices to evaluate the entire 90-man roster. And I know that sounds somewhat obvious, but like he has said this three or four times. I keep getting the impression that Robert Saleh values joint practice as much, if not more, as he values training camp practices, in all honesty. And when I think of the teams they're practicing against, you know, the San Francisco 49ers, obviously one Robert Saleh knows well, having coordinated that defense a year ago, having D linemen like Bosa and Michael Walker, and hopefully those guys are healthy. But, and then, you know, you get the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks, who we know they won that Super Bowl partially based on how that D line is built. So when you want to evaluate O-linemen and you want to evaluate them in pads and you want to make decisions on who's your starting right guard, well, they're going to get one heck of a test, you know, in those joint practices against guys they're not familiar with. There's a difference between going against Jeffrey Simmons every day and, listen, not trying to downplay that. That's definitely a challenge. But, you know, going up against a Leonard Williams, who you're not necessarily used to seeing, and a Bosa or whoever. So, and also the Chicago Bears are on the joint practice schedule as well. So continues to put a lot of emphasis on joint practice. I think that's very, very notable to me.
Yeah. He also said that everyone's going to get first team reps. He said something very interesting that I thought was peculiar. He said, you're going to see guys that you know aren't the starter taking first team reps. And that's for us to gauge whether this guy is an NFL caliber player and if he can hang with the first team. You know, basically like saying, this guy's going to be a backup maybe, but if the guy in front of him gets hurt, is that backup that we're going to then be relying on, is he capable of coming in and not wrecking our entire team? Like, they're going to test these guys throughout training camp to make sure they feel good about their depth. And, you know, they're not going to be great across the board at every position in terms of depth, but they're going to be able to sift through, like, is the guy that we've been running as the fourth team player, would he be better on the second team? And is the second team player actually capable of coming in and getting starter snaps if the guy in front of him gets hurt? Like, I kind of love that philosophy of, like, yeah, you're going to see guys getting first team reps, and you know, as a media member, you know, and as a fan, you know that guy's not a starter, but we need to prepare everybody for the eventual scenario where they have to play significant snaps for us because, unfortunately, as Mike Vrabel used to always say, the injury rate in this league is 100%. Eventually, every player will get hurt at some point.
Yeah, that's the point that where he said that, you know, at OTAs, we kind of evenly split reps between the ones, the twos, and threes, but we are going to distribute them differently at camp, and that's, you know, to that point there. One of the other ones I got here that I wanted to briefly touch on, and it's kind of a, you know, I think we all feel this way, but this quote maybe further reinforced it. He's really letting Brian Daboll run the show on offense and develop Cam Ward, right? When he was asked about the quarterback in the offense, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but Brian Daboll and Trey Tierney, you know, offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, are good at what they do. You know, I will provide info, even from the defense's POV and standpoint, what we're looking for. You know, I think, you know, Mike Vrabel used to do that a little bit, like ways to try to get the offense and make the quarterback better. This is what we're seeing on our side, but ultimately he's trusting, you know, Daboll and Tierney to get Cam Ward in the offense going. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of oversight from him, in all honesty.
Yeah, so it's Daboll. D, like table.
I played that because Hershey throws Daboll in the chat. It's Daboll, like table. Obviously.
I said it right, I think, right?
You did.
Brian,
no,
Daboll.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. You did.
Daboll like table.
I thought that was a really interesting question and answer, honestly, because it was almost like, how do you gauge Cam Ward's development? How do you make sure you're not throwing too much at him? How do you make sure that he's like taking the right steps he needs and is communicating what he likes and what he doesn't like and where he's struggling and not struggling? And Robert Saleh was kind of like, hey, man, that's Daboll's job. Like, I hired him for a reason. I'm in charge of the defense. He's in charge of the offense. That's not exactly, obviously, what he said. But that was kind of the feeling I got from it. And by the way, shout out to Buck Rising for asking the absolute worst question imaginable. I will call out Buck. I'd call him out to his face. I'm not trying to talk crap behind his back. I would say this directly to him for asking if the starting position battles or whatever applies to quarterback. Basically said, are you sure Cam Ward's your starting quarterback? To which Robert Saleh was like, no, Cam is our quarterback. Will Levis is going to get a chance to see if he can be a number two guy, basically. And Mitch Trubisky is going to get his chances to prove that he deserves that job as well. But no, Cam Ward is our starting quarterback. I'm surprised Robert Saleh didn't say, obviously, you idiot, Cam Ward is our starting quarterback.
I was glad I missed it. I didn't hear the question. I only heard the response. And yeah, I'm pretty glad I missed the question there. But yes, they said that Will Levis and Mitch Trubisky will get every opportunity to compete for quarterback two. You plan to hold on to your best 53 players at the end of it. Obviously, I think, you know, coach speak from the, is there such thing as GM speak? Because it was GM speak. It was Mike Borgonzi who answered the question. We're going to take our second break. I've only got one or two short points that I'll run rapid fire through when we come back, and then we'll answer a bunch of questions that we've starred from the Audible Army.
That's right. We will be right back. Welcome back, audio audience. I'll say it again because it's true. You guys are really missing out. You're missing out on some fun convos, chat interactions, talking crap about the local Titans media members.
all I had for this third block before we get to questions was the build up, the follow up to the Trubisky Levis quote. He said, roster bubble players should be living in John Bones Fossil's office because
yes.
What's going to help you guys, you know, determine roster battles that are really close? And unsurprisingly, I think every coach agrees with this around the NFL. They said yep. Special teams, but, you know, an important quote because when we talk about wide receiver six, for example, and we're talking, we all want Xavier Restrepo to make it, or a lot of the fan base does. And you compare it to a Bryce Oliver, who they've absolutely loved on special teams in recent years. You look at linebacker, where James Williams has been a really good special teamer. You look at tight end, you know, where David Martin Robinson has been a really good special teamer. You know, a lot of these guys, I think, go into camp with the upper hand in their specific position battles, the back end roster position battles, because of how good they are on special teams.
Yeah, I think that we have been assuming that this whole time, but it's nice to hear that that is literally, I mean, the framing was like, do you care more about what he does on his side of the ball or what he can contribute to special teams? And the answer was no hesitation, definitely special teams matters. So I thought that was interesting. And then one of the last questions asked at the presser was about a potential extension for Peter Skoronski. I think this is the final point that we will react to and recap here. Is, you know, they asked, like, any progress made? And Mike Borgonzi was like, you know, we've had good conversations. We have made good progress, but it doesn't seem to be imminently close based on the way Borgonzi framed it.
You might have missed the question, because I thought what was good about his response is that I believe the question essentially said, has the window been closed and now it's a next offseason thing? And he said no, like the window's not right. closed. It's still something that we could get done this year, this summer, whatever. But like you said, you know, no tangible update, but we have had some good discussions with his representation. So it's not something we're closing the door on and saying, let's talk again next summer. So yeah, we, you know, might still get the Peter Skoronski extension during training camp. I hope we do. I think the price goes up every day that it doesn't get done. I mean, you want a prime example. How about this? And give me a second as I pull it up. Like, Jeffrey Simmons is now the second highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL based on average annual salary, because Jalen Carter, the Philadelphia Eagles, with a four-year, $152 million extension. You see what happens when you sign guys early? I'm sorry, but a less deserving player then comes along and is the next highest paid player. So just get it done with Skoronski during training camp, and you could avoid him being the Jalen Carter of the guards.
Right. Totally agree. And yeah, I do think that it's just nice to hear that Borgonzi's like, yeah, talks are progressing, but for all we know, Justin, we could get a news alert later today that's like, Peter Skoronski signs record setting. You know, Borgonzi's not going to tell us like, yeah, you know, we're almost there. We just have one or two more deal points to negotiate. And he's also not going to say we're so far off. He's just going to say talks are progressing and hopefully we get something done. Let's get to some live chat questions here, Justin. I have a bunch of questions starred. So I'm going to try to run a little rapid fire through the first ones. And if you want to jump in, just like raise your hand or cut me off before I move on. This was a very interesting...
I haven't raised my hand since grade 12, but okay.
This was a very interesting comment that came in before the stream actually started. In Red We Trust said, I have no faith in the front office anymore. I don't know what, where this came from or why, like the press conference they gave today, if that's what you're talking about, or just like in general, you don't have faith in the front. Let's see how the season plays out, at least the beginning of it, before we start removing our faith in the front office after what we all seem to think was a pretty dang good offseason, especially when you consider that they came into the offseason with no head coach. And now they have a full staff of experienced former head coaches at the coordinator spots. They added a bunch of players who know those coaches. They drafted some good players. Like, what?
Just got here, right? Like, yeah. Haven't been here very long. And they had a great draft last year, right? So it's like, I don't know what we're... I think we could probably move on to the next question.
Hershey was disappointed that Saleh didn't tell everyone that he believed in what the team is capable of. And we know that that was a very good motivational tactic that worked very well for Brian Callahan. It's kind of sad to see Saleh just letting that go.
We're live, folks.
I believe in what you guys are capable of.
It's on a different page because it's an old drop, so I don't keep it at the fingertips, you know?
I should be at the top. I ask you to hit it almost every time. I don't know why it's not the number one drop.
And Roster Grits followed up. Does he even know what he has in this room? I guess that means I have to hit the other one too, huh? I shouldn't have put myself in this position.
I know what we have in this room.
I played the first one.
I sometimes forget that those are separate drops. They're so similar to that.
Yeah, well, they're from the same speech, from a dumb behind-the-scenes thing that we don't get anymore. Like, what the heck? There's like 25 out of 32 teams, the teams produce an in-house version of Hard Knocks. We got it, like, a couple of times. Haven't seen that in a long time. Would be nice if the team would produce some, like, get-us-through-June content, you know? Whatever, not a big deal. Lauren Sebring says, a pec strain for JC. I guess it's good thing it's not a hip. Totally agree. Good thing it's not a hip. I still think a pec strain can turn into a serious condition. It's not something you want to push. So let him get back healthy. They said it's day-to-day. Hopefully they're serious about it being day-to-day. The pads come on in a week. If he's not on the field before the pads come on, he's going to have a really tough ramp-up period to be ready for the San Francisco joint practice and ensuing San Francisco preseason game, in which Robert Saleh seems pretty set on playing some starters. I don't know for how long, but he said it again today. Our guys are going to play in the preseason. It's part of what makes this training camp so long and grueling. So hopefully Latham is back on the field before the pads come on. Otherwise, it's going to get dicey getting him ready to actually get the work he needs to improve and be ready for week one, because the time crunch is on now. And Saul has talked about that a few times too.
Absolutely. I do think it's good news here, though, as Lauren points out, that I do think it's better that it's a pec strain and not a, you know, lingering hip from, you know, that clearly limited him last season.
Yeah. It's Tony Ransom. Can we put Kevin Zeitler on a milk carton? I don't know about you guys, but I'm like out on the idea of bringing Zeitler back. Like, I'd rather they just fail with Volson or Slater than bring back Zeitler, who's only going to prolong your need to learn if you have a future right guard already in-house. Also, this chart came out over the weekend. I quote retweeted it to my timeline if you missed it. You know what, Justin? I'm already set up to share my screen now since I did it before, so why don't I just pull up this chart. This is the most eye-opening and also kind of bonkers thing that, like, I maybe have ever seen in my entire life. I can't believe that this is the case. When I refreshed my thing earlier, I lost the share.
Patrick knows what's coming because he talks about Zeitler being bad at run blocking. I mean,
yes, exactly right. What? Where'd it go? There it is. This is a chart. Let me hide this comment. This is a chart that is showing the efficiency when rushing behind guard-tackle combos. So every team has two combos, right? There's a left guard, left tackle, right guard, right tackle. This, not every combo made it onto this chart because you had to play a certain number of snaps together, minimum 25 snaps together played. If we look at the Titans guard combos here, right here where my mouse is, that's Dan Moore and Peter Skoronski, the left side of the Titans line. They're the highest negative EPA. Yeah, highest negative EPA per play combo. Pretty good overall. I mean, this is more than acceptable. It's not outstanding like we see above them, where the Colts have two of the top three tackle guard combos. Kind of scary. And then if you look at the very bottom of the chart, it's the Latham and Zeitler combo. Not only are Latham and Zeitler by far the worst combo in football last year, they're almost more than double as bad as the next worst team. Like, you go up one team and you almost cut this bar in half for how bad they are. If you look at how good the best team is, Latham and Zeitler are almost twice as bad as the best combo was good. This breaks the whole chart. The rest of the chart is contained between minus 0.23 and plus 0.25. These two guys are at minus 0.41. This is mind-blowing. How can a guard-tackle combo be this bad?
It's a little confusing. I'm going to be blunt with you. I don't want to say grain of salt, but, like, I don't remember thinking they were that awful. You know, like, it feels a little bit much to have them ranked that poorly, that low, based on the eye test. And we've watched every single snap that they played last year. You remember coming out a lot of the game saying Kevin Zeitler was terrible in that game, or J.C. Latham was terrible. Like, you know, J.C. Latham had his issues in pass protection and penalty-wise. They ran the ball really well down the stretch. Now, they had a lot of struggles early on in the year, but they ran it well down the stretch, and that was with, you know, Kevin Zeitler and J.C. Latham essentially playing every single snap. So, I don't know. For me, I'm not going to change my Kevin Zeitler opinion based on this chart. I think he was good, not great, for the Titans last year. And I think there's probably a good chance they get worse at right guard this season.
I'll just say to that point that there's, like, eye test not quite matching stats. And then there are stats that break the chart, and you kind of have to throw out whatever you thought, or at least go back and reevaluate it, because this is unbelievably bad. Unbelievably bad. My picture has gone fuzzy again, and I don't know why, and I apologize to the Audible Army, and somehow we flipped sides here. So anyway, look, if Zeitler doesn't come back, I'm not sweating over it. Like I said, you're better off learning if Jackson Slater or Cordell Volson can be a starting caliber guard going forward than you are running it back one more year with a guy that you know is close to retirement. So that's my feelings on that. Justin, we do have a bunch more questions to get, but you know what? Jumps the line. Super chats.
Oops. Wrong drop.
We keep it a buck.
Don't worry about it.
We keep it in a buck. Brian HDZ99 with a $2 super chat tip says, do you think Bishop can see the field this year? While you were talking and putting up the chart, I literally went to the Titans roster and keyword searched Bishop because I wanted to make sure he was talking about UDFA safety Bishop Fitzgerald. That was the first name that came to mind for me. And that's the only player named Bishop on the 90-man roster, so it is who he's talking about. No, to be blunt with you, can he make the team is the fair question. And that's far from a guarantee. Like, Amani Hooker, Kevin Winston Jr., and Tony Adams are your top three safeties. They probably only keep four safeties. So now we've got Bishop Fitzgerald. We got Jarek Reed. We got Kendall Brooks. We got Eric Hallett. We got Sanusi Kane. Like, a bunch of names that it sounds like I just made up. But, like, Jarek Reed is a good special teamer. Kendall Brooks has been around for a while, and he plays special teams as well. So I think Bishop Fitzgerald is facing an uphill battle to even make the team, let alone see the field this year. So, but he's an intriguing UDFA. I had a draftable grade on him coming out of USC. He had 5 interceptions for the Trojans last year. I liked him coming out of college, but no, I don't think he's going to see the field. We'll see if he could even make the team. If I had to guess right now, he's not even on the initial 53-man roster.
But thank you, Brian, for the super chat. Really appreciate the support.
I answered that question with, you know, I gave that question with honesty, and I love the question. So, you know, glad we could talk about it.
Another one for you, Justin. Charles Wagner. I have no concept of what this means or what it's talking about. It's been a while since I've been here, but just wanted to say that Roberto Martinez is a terrorist and the Portuguese Football Federation is a disgrace.
You hit the Roberto. I love that. Yes, you know what, Charles? I do not disagree. Roberto Martinez is who coached Portugal at the World Cup, Graver. They, in my opinion, woefully underperformed, even though at the end of the day, and this is the bias in me coming out, they lost to the eventual champion 1-0 on a 92nd-minute goal. Like, they were right there. And the Spanish coach, by the way, recently said that Portugal were the best team they played at the entire tournament, and it was the only game that scared them, the only opponent they thought had a chance to beat them. But I hate Roberto Martinez, as Graver puts it. I am so glad he's gone. He's a Brian Callahan-level head coach, and I'm excited about... I won't call them a disgrace, because I'm excited that they hired Jorge Jesus. I think they nailed this hire out of the park. Really excited for Jorge Jesus to take over the Portuguese national team.
Sure, Justin, whatever any of that meant. I refreshed my stream. I look clear again to myself, so hopefully...
You're like, he's talking about Portugal. I got a second to leave.
That feels like good. I started this one, but I've already talked about it. Daniel Caribbean pointing out we have 1 week till padded practice. Patrick, this sounds super fun. I'm really happy for you and your son. Patrick says, I'm taking my son to our first father-son Titans game for the Jets opener. Super excited. Going to be sitting on visitor side, though, so hopefully the Jets fans aren't too obnoxious. I know a Jets fan very well. His name's Dan Hansis, host of Heed the Call. And, he's pretty obnoxious about the Jets, but not in like a disrespectful, rude to your child, your safety is in jeopardy kind of
way. Too bad it's week one. By week five, the Jets fans wouldn't already show up. But, you know, hope is eternal. What do they say, right? So they'll probably be there.
It's Tony Ransom again said, JC at right guard. What do you think? Here's the biggest problem with moving JC to right guard. It's not that I think JC would be bad at right guard. It's not that it wouldn't solve a major right guard potential problem, because I think JC could be a pretty good right guard. The problem is, then who plays right tackle, which is a way more important position. Yes.
A bigger hole with worse players, by the way. Not only is it more important position, I like Cordell Volson better than I like Brandon Crenshaw Dixon or who Austin Deculus. Like,
it's, yes.
So, no. I mean, listen, if J.C. Latham fails miserably at right tackle this year, which I don't think is going to happen, but if he does, maybe we have the last ditch, try to save this thing, right guard conversation next offseason. But we're not having it now.
Right. Clarification on a point I was making earlier. Daniel Caribbean, is he talking about first team reps in practice or the preseason games? This was in reference to Robert Saleh saying that you might see a guy who you know is not the starter taking reps with the first team. I believe he was talking about practices. I don't think he was talking about the preseason, although he might have been talking about both. But my read on his answer there was that he was saying at any given day, in any given practice period, you might see a guy running with the ones who you know is not a starter. So just a little clarification there.
Right, but I think he also mentioned that they're probably going to be playing starters during the preseason. So
right.
You'll see the first teamers out there in the exhibition, presumably.
Lauren Sebring again. Is Teresa still on the beat, writers? Yes, Teresa is still on the beat. In fact, one of the first things that happened was Mike Borgonzi congratulating Teresa on, I think, 30 years covering the team and also announcing that this will be her last year covering the team. And then she went on to ask the first question. Yes, congrats to Teresa. Incredible. She's a fantastic reporter, and we appreciate having her. And after this season, I think we will miss her reporting. Lauren Sebring again. Remember Simmons going off on Buck? This is, if you're listening.
Why did you star that one? Yeah.
If you're listening to this on audio, you missed the part where we talked a little bit about Buck because you're not on the YouTube stream. So go to the YouTube, check it out. I started because I wanted to remind Lauren that we played that clip like 2 weeks ago when we did our Jeffrey Simmons Superstar Arc episode. We actually played the clip of him going off on Buck Rising. That was everything I starred, Justin. The thing about starring it is that I wasn't looking at new chats that were coming in while we were talking. So I don't know if anything new came in that is worth hitting on.
Truthfully, I was paying attention. I don't think I saw anything that was truly, truly worth hitting. Like, I'll put up this one quickly. Need to trade or sign an O-lineman. I mean, Jim Wyatt is sort of hinted at them potentially bringing in more veterans. By the way, which I don't think we ever hit, they signed the cornerback, Nazi Johnson, former of the Kansas City Chiefs with Mike Borgonzi there. He'll come in, a lot of special teams experience, compete for that fifth and maybe sixth cornerback spot. I dropped the 53-man roster projection on Titan Size this morning. Go read it if you haven't. And I actually went with six corners because I'll be honest with you, towards the end there, I had a hard time. I had four tight ends. I had four running backs. Like, there is room for a sixth linebacker or a fifth linebacker, sixth corner, like all those things. So, hopefully they do go get up to bring the point back around. Yes, I think they need to get better at swing tackle. That is currently my biggest concern on the entire roster, in truth, is swing tackle.
And we've been talking about that for months. Months we've been predicting that we think they will eventually sign one. Here's an interesting comment that I want to hit. This is another thing that I have been sort of beating over your heads, audience, if you tune into every episode, which you should. If you're really a member of the Audible Army, you'll watch us every single weekday. And we appreciate everyone who does. Remember to like and subscribe. Like the stream. There's 136 people watching live right now. That means this stream should have 136 likes, at least. So like it if you haven't done it. If you're watching on your TV, all you got to do is like press the down arrow, I think, on your remote and find the like button and click it. If you're watching on your phone, tap the screen or turn us vertical and hit the like button. If you're watching on your computer, it couldn't be easier. Like the stream, please. We really appreciate it. Anyway, Elite Chronicles Clips says, I want Hill, Anthony Hill Jr., to start over Cody Barton. Linebacker is one of the easiest positions to play. They can fit right in day one. This is we're having a little glitch set back and forth, you and me here. Are we good? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but yes, you were definitely glitching a little bit there, probably related to your connection.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. Need to restart my computers, probably. Anyway, I've said this many, many times, and I'll continue to say it. I do not think Anthony Hill Jr. is going to win a starting job in training camp. I think it would be awesome if he did, but I just have seen rookies come into the league before when there is a qualified, if not spectacular, at least qualified vet playing ahead of them, and that rookie doesn't just win the. They don't just go take starting jobs. Like coaching staffs like to rely on guys who have experience and know what they're doing. And I think that that's what we're gonna. I think that's how it's gonna play out. Would it be awesome if Anthony Hill was capable of coming in and taking Cody Barton's starting job from day one? It would be awesome. But I really have to disagree with the fact that linebacker is one of the easiest positions to play. Like, I don't think there's any position in the NFL that's easy to play, first of all, for a rookie translating from a college defense to Robert Saleh's complex scheme. But I also don't think that's one of the easier positions to play in general. And I know Robert Saleh's linebackers ask different things than what Denard Wilson's linebackers were asking. I have no idea how Anthony Hill's responsibilities are going to change from what he was doing at Texas to what he's going to have to be doing now. But I guarantee you there is a steep learning curve, and that learning curve is not going to make it easy for him to just come in and steal a starting job. So I've said this many times, and I'm going to continue saying it. If he does, it's great. I would not be expecting it. And if you are expecting it, you're just setting yourself up to be disappointed.
I'm with you. But you know what? Tomorrow's the first practice. We're finally going to have news and notes. And get a lot of answers to questions that we have or start getting those answers. And there's going to be some surprises, I bet, right? Like guys working with the twos that we thought were threes or fours or whatever, right? Like we're going to learn some things that we do not know right now. And I think you and I are very thorough and do a good job with our analysis and projections and expectations, but we don't, you know, the coaching staff knows more than we do, and they've kept a lot of that stuff close to their chest. So we're going to learn some things, and I'm excited to start learning about how they view some of the guys and how that is going to be different than maybe what our expectations were. So real pumped about it. I think that's going to do it for this very special live edition, this impromptu live edition of the Music City Audible podcast. We wanted to go live the moment that Mike Borgonzi and Robert Saleh ended the presser. That's essentially what we did about 10 minutes later, 10, 15 minutes later. Instead of recording this and then having to edit it, get it out to you several hours from now, we wanted to hit you with the updates from that presser immediately. That's what we did on this near 60-minute edition, live edition of the Music City Audible. We'll be back tomorrow. And I'll be honest with you, once again, I don't know if it's going to be live or if it's going to be pre-recorded, but we will have a Wednesday episode, as per usual, talking about the first training camp practice. We're pumped about it. We might get so excited that we might go live once we have all the updates that we need. So make sure you're subscribed to the channel, tuned, leave comments, likes, all that good stuff that Graver's always asking you about. Go ahead.
Yeah, wait till after the stream ends. Just hang out for a few seconds and then leave a comment, especially if you're on your phone or your computer. It's super easy. If you're on your TV, I don't even know if you can leave a comment, but maybe figure out a way to do it because it helps us a lot. I was just going to say, Justin, I'm recording a Heed the Call episode tomorrow. So it depends sort of on when practice ends, when those reports of what happened at practice start flooding the timeline, when Jim Wyatt writes his observations piece, when all that stuff comes out. If I'm mid-recording Heed the Call, we may go live afterwards so I don't have to edit this show too. If practice is early in the morning, I don't know. Maybe we should just go live no matter what and we'll figure out what time based on when my recording schedule would be interrupted or something like that. You know what I mean? Maybe we just plan to go live. Just do it.
I think, listen, if with him recording Heed the Call, we're going to get this to you late if we got to, you know, edit two shows. So we'll probably be live tomorrow once, you know, practice is wrapped up and we've got all the info ready to analyze and deliver our expertise. Appreciate you guys. We'll be back tomorrow after the first training camp practice of the new season. The Tennessee Titans are back. Football is back. And we're pumped to bring you coverage 5 days a week. All things Tennessee Titans. We are in the swing of it. So until tomorrow, when y'all come back for another live stream, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.